from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. September has been a month of protest inside American prisons. It started on September 9th, the 45th anniversary of the Attica prison uprising in upstate New York. Inmates in prisons in Alabama, Michigan, South Carolina, Georgia, Texas, and California walked off their prison jobs, many protesting what they called forced prison labor, some calling it slavery. In some prisons, the strike has gone on. This hour on Point, U.S. inmates in prisons across the country on strike. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you know what the work is inside America's prisons? Do you know the working conditions? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. If this is not part of the world, it may seem very distant to you, but we have a very large prison population in this country. Many of them work, are required to work, are not paid much for it. Some of them now framing this in terms of a kind of slavery. Here's the sound of Nashville protesters. They put on costumes and held signs protesting what they call modern-day U.S. slavery in the prisons. Nationwide, inmate pay starts at 15 cents an hour. Al Berkman was a protest organizer. He spoke with News Channel 5 in Nashville on September 9th.
The way that private prison companies such as CCA, based here in Nashville, are taking advantage of this loophole are by making immense profits off of people who are working in slave conditions, who have no control, no ability to organize, minuscule wages, a fraction of minimum wage, and virtually no voice.
Slave conditions. It's not how we normally think of this, but people are riled up. There are a lot of people in prison in this country, and some of the tension outside appears to be flowing in as well with Black Lives Matter and all the rest on September 11th as part of a strike at prisons. On September 9th, about 30 demonstrators organized by the Campaign to Fight Toxic Prisons rallied outside the Coleman Prison in Wildwood, Florida. Listen.
Fire, fire to the prisons!
Fire to the prisons. The class war makes us strong. We want to pay attention to what's going on here. With me now in the studio is Beth Schwartz-Apfel, staff writer for the Marshall Project, a nonprofit news organization covering the U.S. criminal justice system. She's been covering labor conditions in prisons for years. Beth, welcome to On Point. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So what do we know about what has gone on in this month in American prisons around this strike?
Well, in a way, we only know what striking prisoners and their allies on the outside tell us. It's very difficult to verify any information coming out of prisons, in part, of course, because prison officials make that hard to verify. Mm-hmm. But the numbers coming out of prisons are that on September 9th, at least 24,000 prisoners did not show up for work that day in protests that spanned 12 states.
And we listed a bunch of them there, 24,000. I've read someplace that there are about 700,000 prisoners in this country who work as part of their incarceration. So it's not as though it's a majority or anything like it. And on the other hand, 24,000, if it's anywhere near that, that's a lot of people. Is this a significant thing?
I think the most significant thing about it is that we're still talking about it. I think it's raised a lot of awareness for people that prisoners do work and that they labor under none of the protections that your average free world worker has. And so I think that regardless of whether the work stoppage made an impact on the operations of the prisons themselves and whether they did or not remains to be seen, I think the larger point is that suddenly now everybody's talking about prison labor, where I think before people didn't even know that prisoners work.
What are they do in there? I mean, we've known, a lot of people have known, they make license plates and other things, but beyond license plates, what else goes on in the working side of this equation?
Oh, sure. Well, the vast majority of prisoners do the work of running the prisons. So they mop the floors, they file papers in the warden's office, they do the laundry, they mow mm-hmm. the lawns, they cook and serve food. So if truly every prisoner walked off their job, these prisons really wouldn't be able to run. There are much smaller programs that are designed to mimic real world working conditions. And in these programs, they're called prison industries programs. Prisoners make products that are sold to governments and nonprofits. They make furniture that's used in state houses. They make uniforms that they themselves wear or that correction officers wear. They make there's a metal shop in one prison in North Carolina where they make all the signs for the state highway system. They do a wide variety of things. They run cook chill facilities where they cook and package and ship food for all the different prison facilities in the state. Anything you could think of, pretty much, prisoners do. They run call centers. There's really a wide variety of private style jobs inside prison.
I read in here somewhere, in some states they make bed frames and mattresses for state universities. I mean, this stuff shows up in odd places. Many people may say, well, look, we have the image of prison work in our mind's eye forever. I'm not saying that it's a great thing, but, you know, chain gangs, busting rocks, and all the rest. Is there any prohibition on asking or even requiring prison inmates to work in this country?
Actually, no. In fact, the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery, has a specific exception for people in prison. It's called the Exception Clause, and it's one of the things that the strikers are most upset about. The 13th Amendment says that slavery is unconstitutional, mm-hmm. except as punishment for a crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. So that means that literally—
most people in jail, if they've already been convicted. Some of them just waiting in jail, of course, for their trial. But
exactly. So anyone in prison can, under the Constitution, be held as a slave. That is what the Constitution says.
Well, slave, I mean, that's one way of framing it, but is there something inherently morally wrong about asking prisoners to help mop the floor in a prison?
I'm a reporter. I'm not here to take a moral position.
Well, but I mean, you've paid attention to the people who philosophize and think ethically about this, I presume.
Sure. No, I don't think that any prisoner would argue that they don't want to work or that they have a problem mopping the floors. I think rather what people complain about or feel is unjust is, first of all, that they're paid so little or at times in certain states paid nothing for their labor. And second of all, that they have no control over the working conditions and that they have no workman's compensation. They have no disability. They can't even not go to work one day if they're sick. They have no control over their work, and they're not fairly compensated for it. That's the main complaint. Nobody, I don't think, would argue that prisoners shouldn't work.
Are there states where prisoners, or is everywhere, are they required to work?
States where, and I'm fairly sure the federal government as well, where you are required to work and you can receive a disciplinary infraction for not working.
We've got callers on this already, and I want to go to them. Eric in Portage, Wisconsin. Eric, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, geez, what you just said is true. I've been twice to prison, and what they do is you voluntarily get to go to work or not on paper, but in reality, if you choose, if they come at you and say, oh, you're going to work in the kitchen tomorrow morning, and you choose to say, actually, I'm waiting for a welding job to open up or something, then your life is a living hell in there. You don't get to have visits. You basically are locked in your cell 23 hours a day. It's almost like being in the hole.
So it's work or your privileges are taken away. Were you paid for your work, Eric?
I was paid 12 cents a day.
12 cents a day.
Yep.
Did you mind working? I mean, it could be pretty boring just laying around the bunk.
Oh, I love working. I work every day of my life, and I have to work. So I have a pretty good attitude. A lot of guys hated it. But I like to work anyways because I have to work. So otherwise you get, I think people are made to work. But yeah, I like working. But sometimes one day they tried to get me to go to the kitchen, and I actually had some things I was getting ready to do to get out of a class I was supposed to take. And I was able to avert the punishment of that. But it's pretty much forced labor. They punish you pretty severely if you choose, quote unquote, choose not to go to work.
What do you think about the word slavery being applied to this?
Like I said, I had a pretty good attitude. So slavery is kind of hard for me to swallow. But it depends on your definition of the word slavery, I guess. But like I said, if you choose not to go to work, you might as well just go to the hole, because that's pretty much how your life is going to be treated. You get treated like an animal, mostly. But if you choose not to work, any human dignity is gone.
Eric, I really appreciate your calling in. That's firsthand testimony about how this all works. Ben, Beth Schwartzapfel, please stand by with me here in the studio. Kenneth Glasgow joins us now from Dothan, Alabama, a former prisoner, outside national spokesman for the Free Alabama Movement. They've been right at the heart of the strike that unfolded around the country this week. Kenneth Glasgow, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, and thank you for having me, Tom.
Why is this going on? Why are people actually saying, no, I'm walking off the job, even though we just heard that former prisoner right there saying you can pay pretty dearly for refusing to work in prison?
Well, he may live up north somewhere, but in the south, I know for the southern prisons, two things that stand out that I've been told by those incarcerated, especially the Connecticut Justice and the Free Alabama Movement, is one, they're not getting paid. I think they have to make a quota of 20,000 license plates a day to meet a quota of 100,000 license plates a week. And this is a $1.7 billion industry, and none of them are getting paid, first of all. You know, some of them getting paid less than a dollar, some 17 cents, some nothing at all. That's first and foremost. And then the other thing of people seeing the difference of it, I think it's a regional thing on why people don't see it as slavery, and those who initiated from the Free Alabama Movement that initiated, organized, and led this whole national strike that happened across the 24 states and the 40 to 50 prisons, is because here in Alabama and these southern states, we're in the fields. We're actually out there picking peas and picking on the street, and got horses over us, people on horses, correctional officers that are riding horses with the shotgun. So we see the replication of slavery. It looks just like slavery. So that's why it is slavery to us and may not be slavery to others.
Is it really just about money, Kenny? If you got paid, I don't know, a buck an hour instead of 15 cents or 10 bucks an hour, would everything be fine, or is it something else?
No, it's way more than that. It's the fact that there's a lot of contract leasing that goes on here. And then, you know, some of the big-time industries and companies that run the multimedia, that sponsors and supports the multimedia, have most of the country believing that people don't have jobs, and is the unemployment is because these companies and industries are outsourcing to other countries and outsourcing their manufacturing in all the other countries. Well, actually, they're not outsourcing. They're insourcing.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking this hour about a prison strike that's been going on this month in prisons around the country. American prisoners saying forced labor or work inside the prisons amounts to a kind of slavery, and they've had enough, at least on the terms that they have now, many making just cents an hour for their labor inside the prison. Beth Schwartzapfel is with us from the Marshall Project. She's been reporting on all this. It's not easy, because it's not easy to know what's going on. Prison authorities are not eager to talk about what's going on in there, but it has come out. It looks like thousands in at least a dozen states and involved in this, and a bunch of prisons in a lot of states. Kenny Glasgow is with us as well, a former prisoner himself. Now he's with a spokesman for the Free Alabama Movement. They've been right at the heart of this. It all unfolded on September 9th. It began. That was the 45th anniversary of the uprising, if you want to call it that, at Attica, the prison in upstate New York. State troopers and police forces used helicopters to gas prisoners there. This is all the way back in 1971. Fired a reported 4,500 rounds of ammunition on unarmed prisoners. Many deaths there. It was all caught on film. Just a terrible, terrible, unbelievable scene all those years ago in Attica, and prisoners still thinking about it these days. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Should prisoners be paid enough for their prison work that they come out with something, enough of a grub stake to restart with? Other than license plates, do you even know what they make in there? And what do you think of the complaint that the conditions and the pay are insufficient, maybe even inhuman, maybe even slavery? Kenny Glasgow, Beth Schwartzapfel, please stand by. Callers for the two of you. Jenny in Jamestown, Rhode Island. Jenny, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm thinking that we're not taking into consideration the fact that, I mean, presumably they are in there to be rehabilitated, and tax dollars are paying for them to be housed, fed, and utilities, et cetera. So they're not paying any of those things where they would be in the free world. So I don't think that they should get equal compensation, because why would they need the money? In the free world, they needed to pay those bills, but otherwise they wouldn't.
Jenny, I'm going to pick that up, I promise. I'm going to take it straight into one of America's prisons, if I may. Kenny and Beth, please stand by with us right now. from Ohio State Penitentiary in Youngstown, Ohio. Inmate Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, an organizer for the September 9th Free Ohio Movement. So we're talking to Sadiq inside the prison where he's serving his time. Sadiq, thank you very much for being with us. You hear Jenny saying, look, you got free room and board. Why shouldn't you work?
There's many reasons. Well, first of all, how you doing, Tom?
Okay, and thank you for joining us.
Yes, I mean, while I may respect her opinion, I diametrically opposed to her position. There's many reasons why prisoners should be paid for the acts of labor. For starters, you have many prisoners in prison who have actual claim of innocence. And recent DNA testing and other evidence have proven that many people in prison, they have later on been exonerated of their crime.
Yep.
So these people have been super economically exploited for their labor. They've been taken from their family, friends, and loved ones.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
Okay, we've got that. I know that's just good. Yep. Go ahead, Sadiq. Sorry.
Yes. They have experienced a long train of abuses by the prison press, etc., and then when they get ready to be released back into society, they have nothing to show for it. You have many people in prisons that have to go through, they have to pay child support. Some of them catch outside cases. They have to pay court costs. And when their family and friends and loved ones try to send them money to purchase them the things that they actually need, this money is confiscated by the prison authorities. Family members have to come from a long distance to visit them to try to maintain contact and communication with them. And statistics shows that those prisoners who have regular communication with their family, friends, and the community in which they hail from, the recidivism rate is cut and actually half. But family members are being economically exploited. It's just a recent development where the phone calls in many states now, the FCC, the Federal Communication Commission, stepped in and issued an order for prison officials and various different companies to stop economically exploiting prisoners for a phone call. Just take, for example, early last year, for me to call you and speak to you for 15 minutes out of state, it would cost anywhere from $15 to $20. That's super economic exploitation. And that burden largely goes to the family member. So if prisoners was being paid and compensated as traditional workers and having the same protection as traditional workers, there are many benefits that can come about as a result of it. First of all, it would stop the economic exploitation of our family, friends, and loved ones. Prisoners, they work for many hours, and when they're being released back out in society, all they give is a small paycheck and the clothes on their backs. They have no place where they can actually stay, and they're put in a position where the system is inducing them to fail, because there's no one in prison for missing Sunday school. There's no one in prison for missing, failing to attend a mosque or synagogue. People are either in prison because they committed a crime.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
Sadiq, stand by for just a moment. Sadiq, if you could stand by for just a moment, I just need to explain to our listeners who may have just tuned in that you are speaking with us from the Ohio State Penitentiary in Youngstown, Ohio, because the recording keeps coming in on top and saying it's coming from an Ohio corrections facility. I want to say to you, Sadiq, I mean, you are a good spokesman for your cause. You're very eloquent in putting it out there. On the other hand, you've got people like Jenny who just called in saying, well, on the other hand, you know, the citizens are paying for your room and board there. Now, you don't want to be there. We get that. Did you see this strike in your prison, in Ohio State Penitentiary, Sadiq, this month? Did you have a strike?
Yes, but here at the Ohio State Penitentiary, which is a supermax prison, the only type of work that prisoners here are allowed to do, anyway from like 24 to 32 prisoners, they will be what they call porters, arranged men. They do sweeping floors, cleaning off the windows, and things of that magnitude. So this is isolation prisoners. So what we did, we went with the hunger strike for 7 days. And you had over 50-something prisoners that was engaging in hunger strike. And in commemoration of the Attica uprising that happened in September the 9th of 1971, in commemoration of what's going on around the country, we decided what we would do. We would go on a hunger strike and put up whatever resistance that we can to let our voices be heard. We wanted to show solidarity, yep, not with just the Attica movement, but what's going on around the country with regards to prison slavery.
Sadiq, you're a smart guy. You're a smart guy, and I wish you would. I want to pull the lens back and look at this in an even broader context, because we'll have listeners. Again, you're inside the penitentiary, and there's a crime behind that, presumably. And listeners may think, well, come on, you know, you did the crime, do the time, and some work comes with that. At the biggest level, what's the problem here, Sadiq?
Okay. First of all, speaking of my own situation, I'm one of the prisoners that was convicted as a result of the 1993 prison uprising that happened at the Southern Ohio Correctional Facility, which was Ohio's infamous maximum security prison. And I have a claim of actual innocence, and that's not self-serving. There's tangible evidence to support my case of actual innocence. So, again, with regards to your guests who disagree that prisoners should be paid, my position is this. We can disagree without becoming disagreeable. But, again, if you're inducing prisoners to fail and they get out and fail and they commit more crimes, because what is a job? A job is a means of support. Why is this important? It's important to help people get the things that they actually need in life. And a prisoner's being released with no money in their pocket can't have a job opportunity. And yep, you have many people that discriminate against minority people, or prisoners, ex-prisoners.
Yep.
Then they're put in a catch-22. You're inducing them to actually fail.
What would satisfy you, Sadiq? What kind of working conditions or pay? What would satisfy you?
Our position is, with regards to the Free Ohio Movement and some of the other movements across the country, that prisoners should be paid like traditional workers and given the same protections. Right now, if a prisoner is working and they get injured, they don't get any compensation for that. They don't get a workers' compensation or being injured. They're not given any of the traditional benefits as traditional workers. So prisoners are just being exploited. They have no health care, no medical, or no paid leave, no sick leave, no social security withholding, no retirement plan, and the list goes on and on and on.
This call is originating from an Ohio correctional facility and may be recorded and monitored.
So we're saying that prisoners should be compensated. Not only that, a lot of prisoners' family are out there in society who are struggling. It's no coincidence that people out in society or trying to get a livable wages, asking for $15 wages. But yet it's still because of the love and the concern that they have for their family members behind enemy lines in prison, they will go and get in debt trying to help them so they don't end up getting in debt and end up losing their life or getting seriously hurt inside the institution. So if prisoners were being provided the same monetary compensation for their work as those out in society, prisoners can help their family. For those who have children out in society, they can pay child support. They can give engage in a lot of activity. But as it stands now, the only people that are actually benefiting from prison slavery is the prison industrial complex and their corporate friends. They're the one who making all the money. They're who making the millions and billions of dollars. And what your guests have to understand is this. Don't allow the government or don't allow the prison system to pit you against us. It's not about us against you. The same government that is exploiting people out in society, it is the same government that is exploiting and oppressing us behind enemy lines. So instead of us going at each other, we should join forces and take on this system because they're exploiting all of us.
Sadiq, I know, I've got to let you go here. I know that you've got limited time there from the penitentiary at the Ohio State Penitentiary in Youngstown, Ohio. I have to say, you know, I don't know the entire criminal record here, but I'm sorry that your mind is on that side of the wall. You're a thinker and a fellow citizen I would enjoy engaging with outside of that prison. And I wish you luck there. And I know you've sort of stepped up to talk with us today. I hope it doesn't cause you problems there. I'm not sure we'd agree on everything, but it's very interesting to hear your perspective on this. And I want to thank you for joining us. Thank you very much.
And you're welcome. And God willing, I will join you one day and the rest of them out there in society.
Sadiq Abdullah Hassan, an inmate at Ohio State Penitentiary. We're talking about strikes around the country this month in prisons about prison labor, those conditions and compensation. Remarkable conversation there with quite a prisoner inside Ohio State's penitentiary. I think we're going to go inside another prison in a moment. But Beth, you've been listening to all this, and you heard Jenny's call that came in first and say, come on, they did a crime. We're paying to feed them and house them. And, this is criminal justice in this country. And why shouldn't they work?
As it turns out, when we're paying to feed and house them, we're also spending taxpayer dollars to support their families on the outside. Sadiq made this point, but research shows that families with an incarcerated parent are 50% more likely to use Medicaid. They're 2 times more likely to use food stamps. So it's sort of like robbing Peter to pay Paul. You skimp on paying prisoners, and then the government's on the hook for taking care of their families because they can't.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd wish that their families could get jobs on the outside as well. I want to go in just a moment to Heather Ann Thompson, who's written about Attica, which the memory of which lies behind a lot of this. But we have more calls coming in from inside the world of the American prison. With me now, calling in from the Holman Correctional Facility in Atmore, Alabama, a prisoner who goes by the name Kinetic Justice. Kinetic Justice, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Your prison has been at the heart of this movement for strikes in September. What happened there?
Actually, in March of this year, we had back-to-back riots. Then in May of this year, we had work stoppage. Then in July, we had another uprising. And then on September 9th, we engaged in a national work strike to end prison slavery / the institution of slavery and to abolish the 13th Amendment.
Why these riots? Why the uprising? Why the strike?
The Alabama prison system is one of the most overcrowded prison systems in the country. It ranges at 200% over capacity. It houses approximately 27,000 people, I think, to date. However, it was designed to hold only 13,300. So when you pack people on top of each other in these environments, and you're just warehousing them without any kind of education or rehabilitation goals, and your only objective is to work them for free, it creates a hostile environment. And then in the state of Alabama, to save money, they have lost maybe 30 to 40% of their workforce. So their staff is extremely short. So you're dealing with a situation where you're having one officer to a ratio of maybe 200 people in these environments, that people are jammed and crammed into these places like slave ships. So the violence that we're seeing is a direct result of the state of Alabama refusing to come to the table and have conversations with the people that are incarcerated in the state, because we've been having this problem for the last 10 years of overcrowding, of lack of adequate medical treatment, inhumane conditions, excessive brutality by officers on inmates, sexual assault by officers on inmates. I think in January of 2014, the Department of Justice issued a report that showed that for 20 years that the officers at Tugwell Prison for Women in Alabama, that they had been sexually assaulting these women, had been giving them Skittles and things for sex favors. So it's just a complete culture of violence and corruption in the state of Alabama, and it's boiling over to a head now.
You've been in solitary recently. I'm not even sure how you are talking with us today. Are you on the formal prison phone there or something else?
Well, actually, I have been in solitary confinement for 33 months for organizing nonviolent peaceful protests here at Holman in January of 2014, which spread to St. Clair Correctional Facility, then to Elmore Correctional Facility.
Do you fear punishment for talking with us today?
Actually, Tom, I've been placed in solitary confinement indefinitely with a cell that has no running water, that's cold. The hot water is the only water that works. There's no way for me to communicate emergencies to the staff. There's no lighting in the cell. I was diagnosed a year ago with having digestive blockage. I've been denied medical treatment for over a year. So it's pretty much nothing else they can do to me, Tom.
We heard that prison guards also walked off at least a shift there. Is that true? Is that right?
Why? Yes, that is true.
Why?
Several officers had been threatened by inmates and so forth, and this administration told the officers not to worry about it. And officers began quitting when they seen this level of violence that was going on. And then it was being directed not just at the people here, but now it was being directed at them. And the administration was not responding appropriately. And as a result, one of the officers here was killed earlier this month. And as a result of that, the officers came together and they began to dialogue with the men who are incarcerated here and began to see the fit to that.
Kinetic Justice, stand by there. We have to take a short break. In Holman Prison in Alabama, please stand by. We're looking at strikes in the American prison system. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We are talking this hour about a prison strike that's been going on this month in prisons around the country. American prisoners saying forced labor inside the prisons amounts to a kind of slavery, and they've had enough. 13th Amendment to the Constitution, of course, rules out slavery in this country, but there is an explicit exception there if you've been convicted of a crime, if you're in prison. And, of course, many prisoners are asked to work around the country. The pay for that, very, very small, sometimes 15 cents an hour. And you've got prisoners saying, look, come on. And you're hearing it this hour from inside prisons. One of them is just with us from Alabama. It goes by the name Kinetic Justice at the Holman Correction Facility in Atmore, Alabama, where the wave of strikes around the country started in September this year. You can join us this hour. Are you sympathetic to prison workers who say prison work is a kind of slavery? Or are you thinking you did the crime, you do the time and work? As you listen today, are you changing your mind about what's right, what's reasonable here? Beth Schwartz-Appel joins us from the Marshall Project. They've been reporting a lot on what's going on in prisons around the country in this month. Kenny Glasgow is with us. He is spokesman for the Free Alabama Movement. With us from Dothan, Alabama, and knows this system very, very well. Kinetic Justice is with us on the phone from inside solitary confinement in Alabama. And I hope you'll stand by for 1 second. I want to get a little historic perspective here. Heather Ann Thompson joins us from Ann Arbor, Michigan, historian at the University of Michigan, researches mass incarceration. She's author of the very well-reviewed book, just out recently, Blood in the Water, the Attica Prison Uprising of 1971 and its Legacy. Heather Ann Thompson, thank you very much for joining us.
Great to be here.
It's awkward to be looking all the way back to 1971 at the same time we have a prisoner in Alabama on the phone right now. On the other hand, we want some context for this, Heather. How do you see what's going on? Is it related to what went on in 1971? Our prison population is so much bigger now than it was then. How do you look at the strikes in this month that our prisoner in Alabama on the phone with us has been involved in?
Well, first of all, there is a direct line between prisoners standing together back in 1971 for basic human rights and what we're hearing today on your program. And I must say, I'm really grateful that we're hearing from the guys on the inside in Ohio and in Alabama because way back in 71, folks on the inside really wanted to let people on the outside understand that who is behind bars are human beings. Who are desiring pretty basic human rights. And to listen to these guys, it becomes really clear that, you know, while they may have been sentenced, the sentence was to be contained. It was not to be abused. It was not to be deprived of basic medical care, decent food, and so forth. And so these protests, these strikes, really resonate with what prisoners have been saying for decades, which is you have to recognize we're people, we're human beings. And I think it's really interesting that we're discussing whether or not it's okay to exploit them in the labor force, because, of course, that, too, is a human rights issue. It isn't that prisoners don't necessarily want to work. It's not that they don't want to be job trained. It's that they don't want to be abused and exploited on the job. And I think, actually, if your listeners knew a little bit more about how this worked, they would be quite appalled.
What's the exploitation, Heather? I mean, well, lots of people work. I work. Lots of people work.
Exactly.
Lots of people push mops. What's the exploitation here?
It's the exploitation is not only that folks don't make enough money to basically subsist within prisons, to actually supplement their food, which is inadequate, to supplement the care they need, the sanitary supplies they need, the clothing they need, but also to take care of their children on the outside, their families on the outside. There's that exploitation, but it's also not optional. So it means if you're sick, you have to work. If you're not working fast enough, you don't get paid. There's a reason that this workforce is being sold to American businesses as quote unquote compliant, being advertised as a group of people who basically won't give you any trouble.
And to do what, Heather? To do what for American business? To make what? What work?
Well, making everything. There's many products that are made. You go to any state to their correctional industries website, you can see the vast array of products that are now being made in prisons that used to be made on the outside. But perhaps even more alarmingly, it's private companies who are leasing these prisoners like what we used to have in the 19th century at the end of the Civil War. And these prisoners are being leased in incredibly exploitive conditions. And the only people making money, it's not the workers on the outside that used to have those jobs. It's not the prisoners on the inside who are trying to also sustain themselves and feed their children. But it is the companies. And we know that this is what the motivation is, because in 1979, companies banded together to basically overhaul all these regulations that were preventing them from accessing prison labor. And they didn't do it till we get mass incarceration. They didn't do it till they saw, oh, my goodness, look at how many people are locked up. This is a compliant workforce. This is a workforce that we can exploit.
Compliant, so more than compliant. I mean, they're straight up locked up. Beth Schwartzapfel with me in the studio. How widespread is this leasing of prisoners?
It's called the Prison Industrial Enhancement Program. It's, you know, relatively speaking, it's small. It's a small program. There's about 5,000 prisoners who participated in it nationwide.
Out of 1.5 million, and we have one of the biggest prison populations in the world by far.
Indeed. I think it's more what rankles folks like Professor Thompson is the sort of theoretical underpinning of it, that companies can come in, set up factories inside prisons. They're required by law to pay, quote unquote, prevailing wage, but then the prison can dock up to 80% of that wage for victims' compensation, room and board. So the prisoners end up with a paycheck that looks very much like what they would have gotten if they had been pushing a mop. And the company gets pretty much, as Professor Thompson mentioned, a compliant worker.
We've got a lot of people calling in, and we have a prisoner, Kinetic Justice, in the Alabama prison. I'll come right to you there. David in Shawnee, Oklahoma. David, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I was incarcerated for 2 years, and in the facility I was in, we made all the clean products for the state of Oklahoma, as well as mattresses for some of the state schools.
Okay.
And your pay was basically $1.63 a month, which was just enough to make you no longer indigent, which you had to go to the canteen and buy your soap, your shampoo, shaving products, anything like that that you wanted, you had to pay for yourself out of your paycheck, which would basically take up your whole paycheck, so you were getting nothing.
$1.63 a month, and if you had been indigent, they would have to supply you with those items, but because you were working, you had to pay for them. $1.63, that it's almost literally nothing, David.
Yes, yes. And I'm sorry, I must have misquoted. It was $11.63 a month. $11.63.
Okay, 11. Even there, my gosh.
Just enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was enough to pay for your shampoo and your soap. And but if you didn't work, you basically didn't get anything. You were put on the indigent, and you got very little of supplies at all.
Right. A kind of compulsion almost right there, if you want to have the basics to decently live. David, I appreciate your call. Let me go inside that prison in Alabama again. Kinetic Justice, is that the situation there? Is work optional in your prison? And by what means are inmates compelled or brought to do it?
Actually, we're in the institution I'm in right now. They make every license plate for the state of Alabama. And how they operate this is that they select maybe 30 people, probably the most indigent people it is, to offer these jobs because they know they'll accept anything to do it. And you have to understand that we are living in state-imposed poverty. We do not receive pay for any work inside of these institutions, outside of this industry, which is created to be like the coveted job, a job where you actually get 17 cents an hour to where, you know, you might make $20-$30 a month to supplement the fact that you've been gone 20 to 30 years and you don't have nobody on the outside. So you have no income. And in prison here in Alabama, if you have no income, then you just throw it away in that regard. But I wanted to bring some context to what we were talking about earlier. And
yes,
it's important, the context that we look at this as prison and prison work and so forth, then we start at prison. But if we understand that the 13th Amendment abolished slavery, supposedly, but created it again in the next breath because it birthed the criminal justice system. And what this prison and criminal justice system is the institution of slavery with $1,000 suit on. You change the name of it and the trappings of it, but the same things happen. See, most people in this country confuse the customs and practices that were used to maintain slavery with the actual institution of slavery. The institution of slavery was an economic system where a group of planters were exploiting a group of people that they considered to be less than.
But are you opposed to the idea of incarceration as punishment? That's a very old form of punishment all over the world.
It is not the point of being incarceration, it's the exploitation. If incarceration, it will be about corrections. What we have proposed in the state of Alabama is a prototype for corrections to actually be about education, rehabilitation, and the preparedness to re-enter society with job skills that translate in today's world.
Let me go to John in Miami. John is calling for you from Miami, Florida. John, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah. I've never been incarcerated, but as a citizen, taxpaying citizen, I feel I have a stake in the game and the conversation. I would propose an adjustment in the direction and objectives of the criminal justice system in which, based on a prisoner's conviction, if they're a first-time offender or not, their length of incarceration, they be paid the minimum wage. And the reason I say this is it just seems like a common basic human right. It's part of the American culture when you think about labor laws here in the United States, when you think about trade negotiations we do with countries overseas. And it would give this prisoner population an opportunity to build some resources so when they do transition out, as well as maintain their current lifestyle to some kind of normal lifestyle, as well as possibly help support their families on the outside and take some pressure off of social services.
John in Miami, I've got it. You calling in as a citizen. My mind's being blown from a bunch of directions today. I hope in a fruitful way from these phone calls from inside America's prison system. Think about what's going on here, sort of context shifting ways of thinking about what's going on. I'm still wrestling with it. Maybe our callers are as well. We'll hear from more of them. Alex in Ashland, Wisconsin. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This issue touches home for me because I am a victim of crime, and the people who were convicted are all in prison right now. I was burglarized and lost in the neighborhood of about $20,000 worth of things that are never going to come back to me.
Yep.
And these people are working for, you know, pennies on the hour in prison, and I don't believe that when they do get out of prison about 10 years from now that they're going to be reformed. I don't believe that they're going to come out of the system and get into the workforce and start making money to pay me the restitution. And so the way I look at it is right now I'm out what I lost. The prisoners are being exploited, and you know, the private company who is making money off of whatever item that person is making is putting it in their bankroll. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't see how anyone who is sane or possesses a modicum of integrity cannot see this as exploitation.
I really appreciate your call, Alex, and you were the victim of crime. Kenny Glasgow in Dothan, Alabama, what's the alternative here? Are you saying let's do minimum wage for prisoners or what, Kenny?
Well, I thank God for Alex's call, because that's one of the things I was listening to you all saying, and I was thanking God for someone that suggested the minimum wage, and thanking God for Alex, because that's one of the ways that they could pay their restitution while they're even incarcerated, you know. But one of the biggest things that people should look at, especially taxpayers, is that they're not outsourcing, they're insourcing, and they're using people in prison, not paying them, and those are jobs that could actually be for people on the outside. That's actually paying anywhere from $31,000 to $80,000, depending on what state they're in, for people to get rehabilitation, for people to get education, for people to get trade and skills so they could come out and be better and more productive citizens.
Yeah.
To just keep them in prison and sit up there and use them as free prison slavery and free prison labor. They're not paying anybody restitutions. They're not giving back to society. They're not paying taxes. They're not being taught how to be productive citizens. It's really, really something that we need to look at that's totally inhumane.
Kenny, stand by there. Heather Ann Thompson, is there an alternative model here? I mean, we have so many prisoners in this country, one of the very highest populations of prisoners in the world, highest rate of incarceration. Could we afford to pay all those people, or even just the working portion of them, minimum wage? It's a lot of money.
Well, it is a lot of money, and it raises really important questions about the criminal justice system as a whole, and it would force us to ask questions about who we lock up and why. For example, why are we locking up mentally ill people? Why are we locking up drug-addicted people rather than treating those folks in a different system? So it raises those questions. But it really is about what Kenny says, that this is a broader solution that these folks are looking for. This is something that benefits the whole society. I'll just give you one example. When you look at something like World War II, where people on the outside of prisons were becoming prosperous, we became one of the most prosperous nations on the globe because, for example, there was a defense industry where people were building things for the war effort. Well, today, Kevlar vests are being made in prisons. This is just one example of how industry, manufacturing, things that used to happen on the outside are now happening on the inside. And the problem, again, isn't work per se. The problem is that the only people making money off of that or saving money off of that are either private companies or government, state and federal government personnel. So that's not good for the broader society. So what they're proposing, what the guys on the inside are proposing, is not special treatment. It's not favoritism. It is simply to say, when we go to work, we want to be remunerated for what we do, just as you do on the outside, and it will benefit all of us. Because frankly, companies that know that they can go into a prison in South Carolina, why would they, Anderson Flooring or whatever, why would they pay someone on the outside a much higher wage? They wouldn't. And so it hurts everybody in the society. And I think that's really the larger point coming out of these prison strikes.
I'm not sure what the right answer is here, but this has been a very, very eye-opening conversation today. And I wish we had more time for it. I want to thank all of you. Kenny Glasgow with the Free Alabama Movement in Dothan, Alabama. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Glasgow.
Thank you, Tom.
Heather Ann Thompson, author of the terrific book Blood in the Water, The Attica Uprising of 1971 and Its Legacy, just out. Heather, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Kinetic Justice, a prisoner inside Holman Correctional Facility, where all this got going in September. Good luck to you there. Thank you for your thoughtful joining of us today. Thank you.
Thank you for having on, Tom.
And Beth Schwartz-Apfel with me in the studio with the Marshall Project, who's been covering all of this with great thoroughness. Beth, thank you for your reporting.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, wow, there's a conversation you don't hear every day. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.